Chantrotar, presented by Burnham Law. Hire the winner at burnhamlaw.com. Here's Sean and Sandy.
It is Monday, a mental health Monday after a football weekend. And joining us, as he will every Monday, for the checkup from the neck up is our friend Dr. Rick Priya from Think One For You. That's thinkoneforyou.org. Doctor, thank you for joining us. I want to start off with this. The Broncos, when the starters were in yesterday, did not run the football very much. They went with a pass-heavy script. That doesn't surprise me, because I assumed all along, if you're going to play your starter, specifically Russell Wilson in a preseason game, and Russell Wilson's turnaround is the key to the season, you might as well try to get his confidence back right off the bat. Is that your impression of what Peyton was trying, and how do you think it worked?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what they were doing. And thanks for being here again, guys. It's always great to visit with you on a mental Monday to get your checkup from the neck up. I was quite surprised, honestly. They just kept him in the game. I thought they were going to go two, three series. I don't know how many series he played. He played pretty much the first half.
It was 20 snaps is what it was in total. Now, okay. Sean Payton did say before the game he wanted them to get 16 to 18. In this case, he just happened to let them finish off the drive. It just took them a whole bunch of drives to get to 20 snaps.
It was almost like he left them in, even after the starters were taken out, though.
Yeah.
By the Cardinals on defense. They scored their touchdown against a second defense with their starters.
Right. But I was surprised that he played that many snaps. I didn't know going in he was going to play that many snaps. I would have thought maybe he played two series and then get him out. But, I was quite surprised, and I know that they need reps. You can see watching that offense. They need reps. And as you know, Sandy, I rely very heavy on nonverbal communication, and he looks like the same Russell Wilson as I saw last year. He really did. And it's really sad to me, because I don't think they've addressed what they need to address with him, and that's the neck up. You can get as many reps as you want physiologically, but if you're not right from the neck up, it's not going to matter. And I just think, I'm not saying he's not going to play well this year, but he's got to make some changes between now and week one, because I didn't see it just yesterday.
If I could just ask in a broader sense, because we were talking about it earlier, and I don't think I've ever asked you this before. When you're looking at an exhibition game that doesn't count in the standings,
right?
I read all the reviews of the game, and they have a lot of stats and stuff. And I'm getting the sense that that's not what you're interested in. When you look at an exhibition game, you're looking at body language, whether it be individual or collective.
Yes.
Would I be close to correct on that? That's how you look at preseason game. You talked about nonverbal communication, that body language, right?
Yes.
Did you see any difference, not just from Wilson, but from the offense in general, in terms of body language, as they were admittedly floundering into literally the last play? The last play was a touchdown pass, and then they got taken out of the game.
Right.
But the 19 or so that preceded it weren't very good.
No. I want people to understand, one of the things I pledge to be as a psychologist is objective, with an OB, objective, not subjective. And I got to tell you, honestly, the offense looked very poor in very many ways. We have quantitative assessments, that's numbers. Qualitative is the human experience. And you can watch their body language. You can watch the way they play. I watch quarterbacks, and I can tell you by the way they walk up to the line of scrimmage, by their eye contact or lack thereof, the way they command an offense, the way an offensive lineman lines up, all of that tells us a lot about the psychology of a player. And it looked to me like an offense that wasn't sure of itself. It wasn't really convicted in what they were doing. And the results were consistent with that. So I think the offense has a long way to go. I'm not saying they won't be there by week one. Perhaps they will. But at least at this point, my assessment would be a C- in terms of their score on offense.
Well, obviously, this is the beginning of a process. The offensive line was a major problem. I'll give you guys a couple, a number that is disconcerting at best. Warren Sharp, who puts together a lot of data-driven stuff about the NFL, went back and looked at every quarterback that had five or more dropbacks this weekend. That's a painful, laborious task.
It's a lot of people.
Yeah. The pressure rate on all of those quarterbacks, the quarterback that was pressured the most was Russell Wilson at 64%. The quarterback that was pressured the third most with Jared Stidham at 59. No matter how you sliced it, the Denver Broncos offensive line was abysmal in this game. And in Russell Wilson's case, I'm going to offer a slight defense. He played more from the pocket in this preseason game than we've ever seen him play in an entire game as the Denver Broncos quarterback last year. And he was reasonably effective from there at times, making the right read, ditching the ball, and stepping up and delivering passes. So the challenge for Wilson, who at this point certainly knows his offensive line is not very good, and as a coach that is insisting that he stays in the pocket, how does he go ahead and make those two things fit together?
Well, it's from the neck up. He's the one that has to really believe in the game plan, the play calling, and thus how to distribute the ball. But if he doesn't, you know, it's so important. The offensive coordinator, the head coach, the quarterback coach, and Russell Wilson all have to be on the same page. I have been part of teams where the OC and the quarterback are on the same page, but the quarterback coach is not in on it. The head coach is not in on it. So we got to have those four people that are really in cohesion to help him perform to its peak level. What I see, Sean, is just that look in his eyes. It looks hollow. It looks hollow. There's not a conviction there. There's not a strength. There's not an eagerness. It just looks hollow. And I'm not sure why. I've said here before that he lost his mental enhancement coach over a year ago, Trevor Moad. He lost him. Trevor passed away, unfortunately, with cancer. I know that had a dramatic effect, but that's over a year and a half ago. And I'm not saying get over it, but you have to move on in the NFL. You know, next play mentality, you got to go next season mentality. So I think Russ has some challenges cut out. I think the whole offensive does. And I think it starts from the top. I think it starts with the offensive coordinator, starts with Sean, that they can get everybody on the same page and really function together. Because that offense on just the other night, yesterday, did not look like a well-functioning machine. And I give it back to the coaches. They're the ones that have the reps with them. They're the ones that are teaching and coaching them. And I just don't see it happening with them right now.
I want to ask you about that loss that Wilson experienced, because I think we can all be sensitive to something like that. I mean, they were closer than most. I mean, I know you've had close relationships with players, very close relationships. And if you lost any one of them or they lost you, it would have an effect, whether it's an offensive player or a defensive player, but especially with the quarterback. And he was involved, apparently, Moab, in many areas of his life. The whole Russell Wilson brand was closely tied in with this man. And there was a story last year about Ryan Leaf, who was in the recovery process, and was doing the game on Christmas Day for Westwood One, I believe, between the Broncos and the Rams out at SoFi, which turned into a total fiasco. But in any case, Ryan Leaf had a relationship with Moab and thought, hey, he and Russell Wilson aren't that close, Leaf and Wilson, but we do have this person in common, and I miss him. And I thought, you know, if I ran into Russ before the game, maybe we could chat about that and commiserate, whatever. And he said, not in a critical way at all, he said, Russell Wilson just didn't want to engage on that. He didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that's pretty consistent of what I see. He looks withdrawn. He looks like he's taken a passive response to that loss. And I've always said this, Sandy, as you know in my book, we're talking about finding the beauty in any struggle. You can find beauty in any struggle. Even though Trevor passed away and he was your mental guy, you've got to find the beauty in that. There is beauty in that. You know, you've got to be able to take those deficits and turn them into asset thoughts. And so that to me explains a lot, because Russ looks withdrawn. Like I said, your eyes can tell you a story, paint a picture. He looks hollow.
I didn't watch him every week in Seattle. But I remember when I did, including in the Super Bowl with the Broncos, there was this energy, this dynamism, this look in his eyes. He couldn't wait to get on the field. And now he looks like he can't wait to get off the field.
Yeah, he look to me, if I would give a five-word description, and count me on this one, I would say he does not look like he enjoys the game anymore. And that, to me, is key. You've got to love this game. You can be talented. You can be gifted. You can be in the right scheme. But if you don't love this game, you will never reach your potential. To me, he has lost a zest, a passion for this game. Can it come back? Perhaps. But I don't see it right now.
If you guys are right, and that ends up being the case, that it's become more of a job for Russell Wilson, which it does for players at times, and it does at times near the end of their career, but it also has at times, in the middle of people's career, and they find a way through that. If that is the case, how does he find that joy, especially given the very real pressures? The contract is pressure. Mm-hmm. He's had ex-teammates bagging on him since he left with pressure. Pressure from the media, pressure to perform, pressure from a subpar offensive line. All these things expect a better Russell Wilson, and they expect it right now.
Yep.
How do you do that a step at a time?
Well,
you can't do it all at once. You're just human.
No, right. But he can have the right people in his external group, a mental coach, you know, the checkup from the neck up. He's got to have somebody that can get inside and say, look, we've got to shape our thoughts. Because if you don't, your thoughts will shape you. And that's what's happening right now to him. You can see that he is not convicted. He has to work from the neck up, Sean. It's not the neck down. He's getting plenty of reps. He knows what he's doing there. It's the checkup from the neck up. And here's the sad commentary about mental enhancement in the NFL. Out of 32 teams, I estimate 25, 26 teams don't really understand what they're doing. They really don't. They think they will. They are when they hire a clinical psychologist, but they don't understand the wellness piece.
Because this is all kind of, and I don't mean to interrupt, but it's all kind of new, right? I mean, we're not that far removed from coaches, my way or the highway.
Right.
It's my way because this is the way I always did it. The concept that the players were just numbers that you just churned through over and over again with new guys. Either do it my way or get out or find somebody else.
Right.
This is still all relatively new to not only the NFL, but sports in general. But the NFL seems to have been the slowest to adopting it.
Yeah, because there's this machismo mentality that you have in the NFL that, no, I'm good. I can handle this. But they're not good. Many players are not. You know, Emmanuel Sanders said to my sons one day, he says, your dad's the reason we won the Super Bowl. And I thought he was kidding, you know, just giving me a compliment. And he says, no, you set a climate and culture that it was okay that we loved each other and played together. And when I went to DeMarcus's, There's a Freudian slip, but at DeMarcus's party at the Hall of Fame, you know, Danny Trevathan, Brandon Marshall, Chris Harris Jr., these kind of guys were like, man, you gave us that love, that togetherness that we had on our defense, and we were unstoppable. So I'm not saying I'm the difference, but I'm telling you what.
But Wade Phillips helped too.
Wade Phillips helped too, but I'm telling you this, Sean, just to get to your point, it is relatively new in the last 10 to 12 years, but we've got to understand how important the neck up is, the mentality of performance. If we do not, you know, deploy ourselves out there on the field on the parasympathetic side of the autonomic, which is the calm side of the autonomic nervous system, we will play tense, we will play tight, we will not play with conviction and strength. And when the NFL finally figures that out top to bottom, not just the top five teams, but when they finally figure that out top to bottom, we will have a league that has more have a performance level that's mental as well as physical. We have way overemphasized the physical part of the game, and thus we're that far behind in terms of understanding how the mentality affects everyday performance.
What did you see, if anything, that was behind the miserable performance from the kickers the other night, both of them?
Yeah.
Not that they were shanking every attempt, but the extra point was barely made.
Right.
And obviously there were, from Marr, a missed field goal and one that was blocked.
Right.
And from Fry, a missed field goal, although he did make a 55-yarder later on in the game. Was there anything you saw in that other than the idea that the Broncos may have to start searching again for a place kicker come opening day?
No,
because these two guys didn't seem to be cutting it.
No, you know what the Broncos need is a better performance coach, because that performance coach will teach him to stay on that parasympathetic instead of the sympathetic
side.
And
you worked with Brandon McManus.
Oh, yeah. Brandon was at the at the Hall of Fame, and Brandon and I were talking about what I did with him. You know, as simple as this, this is going to sound so simple. I taught him a mantra. I've been here before. I've done it. I'll do it again. That calms the brain. Why do we want to calm the brain? Because we want to be on the parasympathetic side, which is the calm side. Kickers, quarterbacks, punters, if they're not on the parasympathetic side, they're going to experience muscle tension, and then they're not going to be have the same leg swing, the same arm path when they throw. It comes down to regulating the autonomic nervous system before you kick the ball. And once you do that, the rest is true. They've kicked thousands and thousands and thousands of balls. And if they don't regulate themselves, they'll never be able to kick accurately.
And just quickly on that, when a guy gets the experts in your field, call mm-hmm. it like me,
yep.
call it the yips.
Yep.
Okay, but what can the... Let me ask you the question this way. Can a field goal kicker get the yips?
Absolutely, they can.
Just
get
like
the yips.
A golfer
yes.
putting.
Yes, absolutely. But we can teach them techniques that they use on the sidelines 3 minutes before they go out on the field to regulate that. Again, put them on the parasympathetic, and then their leg swing will be true. It's a technique, it's easily
it's
taught.
It's like a golf swing.
It most definitely is. And when we teach them those techniques, it can regulate the anxiety so they can deploy what they truly are out there.
I mean, what do we say? What's the old axiom, slow heartbeat.
Yeah.
It's really not that far from the truth. He is Dr. Rick Perea. ThinkOneForYou.org is the website. ThinkOne4You.org every Monday for their checkup from the neck up with Dr. Rick Perea in studio. Thanks so much, Doc. Appreciate it.
Thanks, you guys. See you next week.
All right. More about this Broncos loss. Not that the loss matters, but the performances within it do. As Sean Payton correctly pointed out, this might have been the most important football game that a lot of these people have ever played. So who stood out? We'll talk about it next on Miley Sports.
This is Sandy Clough and Chandro Tar on Mile High Sports.
Welcome back. The Denver Broncos 0-1 in the preseason. Not that that matters in the slightest. Sean Payton did mention that you never want to lose a game, and that's part of the cultural shift that he's trying to pull off.
And he said he hates to lose.
And
don't
like losing that way, for sure.
And he did say that. He said, especially that way. But the thing I picked up on was I hate to lose. And my problem, generally, with the Broncos from a competitive point of view is that I'm not sure they have a single player on the current roster, nor have they on rosters over the last 6-7 years, by and large, who hate to lose. Just can't stand to lose, no matter what it is. And with some guys like Simmons and Sertan, it doesn't matter. Sertan has experienced nothing but winning, and he's had a lot to do with that winning throughout most of his career, mm-hmm. Not so much as his first couple of years in the NFL, but he's still a terrific player. And so is Simmons, even though he's been around for 7 non-playoff years and 6 straight losing seasons. But hating to lose is different from wanting to win, because everybody wants to win.
Right.
Not all that many people hate to lose. I thought that's what made Jimmy Connors the tennis player he was.
It
wasn't his raw physical gifts. It was just that he hated to lose.
And a football locker room is made up of so many different, disparate parts that you're going to have so many different personalities in there. There isn't going to be one dominant sort of locker room culture unless you can all sort of meet in the middle about concepts of professionalism, right? So I think when you're trying to run a team like Sean Payton has, coming off of 3 first-time head coaches, that's what you have to do. Because you can have guys that don't necessarily hate to lose. They like to win, but they don't hate to lose. That doesn't mean they can't be very effective players on your team, maybe even the best players on your team. But everyone has to buy in on something. And oftentimes that can be as simple as, okay, well, this is how we handle our business on the practice field. This is how we handle our business. That's why, as a bit silly as it was, his idea prior to the game of no Gilligan hats, no sunglasses, keep your pads on, it is silly. And perhaps he wouldn't have needed to say it if he was joining a team that already had a track record of winning. But on a team that has not had a track record of winning, you're trying to create a culture with those starting points of simple things that everyone can get around, especially while you're getting used to the guys on your roster. So that's part of the equation that I think we don't really discuss about building this. And I guess I'll look as far, we don't have to go very far at all. We'll look at the Denver Nuggets. Jamal Murray hates to lose. Hates to lose. Hates losing more than he likes winning. He's that guy.
Yes, that's his temper.
I don't necessarily know if Nikola Jokic is. And I don't think that's necessarily a problem. Nikola Jokic is the best basketball player on the planet. But if everybody was that way, it can be a problem. Now you have a Jamal Murray on there as a perfect foil to Jokic. They're both extraordinarily gifted and skilled players who play off of each other extremely well, even though they don't necessarily approach their craft in the exact same fashion. That can work on a football field, too. In fact, it has to, because you're never going to have 53 guys with the same personality type. If you're not going to have it on a 12-man basketball active roster, you're not going to have it on a football team. But
of course not.
I don't think they've been able to identify that for the most part yet, and I would say that the at least in Simmons' case, doesn't appear to be one of the, not that he's had a choice, but appear to be one of those guys because he's positive and so we'll get him next week. He's that kind of guy. That's good too. On a team that has high expectations, you also want players like that. Well, you don't get too down.
But
there's got to be a blend.
Point without suggesting that Justin Simmons changes personality.
Oh, right.
And no, be somebody he's not, think you or were. Patrick Sertan change his personality and temperament and start throwing stools around in the locker room.
Right.
Okay. I'm not saying that, but that there has to be somebody in the organization, and maybe that somebody is Sean Payton, who's going to come in and say, I don't like to lose at anything.
I think,
and
right,
especially when
he
said that we'd lose that way. Okay, you have two chances to win the game. There's only 9 seconds left. You can stop them from scoring the touchdown, and you can stop the 2-point conversion. And this all happened within the last 9 seconds. They stopped neither. They failed on both plays. So lose a game that way, and for those of us who watch the Broncos closely, including the fans, including most of our listeners, I'd assume, the loss just had a familiar feel to it. That I know it's third stringers in the game at the end, but it can't somebody on one of those two plays do something to stop.
If you're a Broncos fan and you're
even
not concerned.
Even one of the two, because that's all you needed to do.
That even your third stringers can't stop Arizona's third stringers.
Right.
How good are you, really?
Now, I will say this. It partially in their defense. I don't think David Blau is anything more than a pretty good backup.
But he is a pretty good backup.
But he has started games in the NFL. And if he's the third quarterback, he's out there with a lot more savvy than almost anybody else around him among the other 21 players on the field in the last few minutes of the game. So I will give them that Blau, as they say, has been there before in the sense that he has started games in the NFL and as a starter who started a game and finished a game a few times. He knows.
Including last year with that team, he started two years for the Cardinals.
Few minutes of that game the other night, he's on that side that Dr. Perea talks about, the parasympathetic side. I mean, he's regulated. He has his emotions under control and in a way that maybe none of the other 21 players did. So I will grant them that. But I think it's enormously frustrating because these third stringers are competing. Back to the most important game of their lives statement. For a third stringer, it might be. It's your last chance to make a first impression.
Yeah.
And it's a chance you may not get in that kind of situation in either of the next two preseason games. And then they cut from 90 to 53 after that.
Yeah, and that
formulated practice squad.
And actually, I think it's still – that's still reasonably new. And it honestly is up for debate a little bit, whether that's better for players or not. In fact, I have no idea
if it's better.
I think it's probably not, because if you're going to be cut at all, and you're going to be one of the you have 90 to 53, yeah. So you're cutting 37 players. Yeah. 37 times 32, it's quick math, is that's a lot. I guess I'd almost rather it be in waves, because you have a better chance of being seen.
Absolutely.
And so I think the way the mass cuts work now make it even more important to stand out when you can, because otherwise you're just going to be one of 1,000 plus people.
They do stay around longer.
And that's the counterpoint. That's
more of your stuff goes on tape. And I think for somebody like Elijah Garcia,
right,
who had 2 sacks on 3 plays in the ball game the other night, that's very big for him, and he may get some run in the next 2 games as a result of that. They may put him in with the twos. And the twos,
if I
even
were the
next
Broncos,
week,
I would.
Will play a fair amount. I thought of all the defensive players out there the other night, he was the one who looked most effective.
And
now,
Benito.
I know he's playing against threes from Arizona.
Yeah, but he's a three.
But he's a three.
He stood out against his expected level of competition. Yeah,
and that's the whole idea in preseason. One way or the other, you want to stand out. And you hope it's for reasons other than taking 2 or 3 personal foul penalties.
Yeah.
or jumping offside. But this guy played a clean game, had a couple of sacks. I thought Turner Yell was good. There were some. And the unfortunate thing about the game the other night is 3 starters or kind of semi-starters, I guess the 3 starters right now, all went out. DJ Jones, Josie Jewell, Nick Benito. That's too bad, but it also opened up maybe a little more time for an Elijah Garcia, a little more of a chance to get noticed, and he took on that opportunity and was clearly exuberant in his reaction, as well he should have been. And that... The 2 things I want to see with the Broncos are exuberance and a hatred for losing. And, I go back to Connors again. Nobody was more exuberant than Connors was. I mean, we remember the famous 1991 U.S. Open performance. I don't know, over the course of a tournament, I've ever seen anybody show more exuberance than Connors did as he was closing in on his, 39th birthday, I think it was, in just a remarkable performance. And it was all about exuberance and a hatred for losing, refusing to lose, and calling back through all the years, previous occasions in which he had, as Dr. Perea put it, done it before, and knew even at 38, 39, he could do it again. And I just don't see either the exuberance or the hatred for losing on this team yet. And maybe it comes from Peyton. Maybe it comes from some of the assistants. And I've heard some good things about some of these assistant coaches. We both admit we don't know many of them,
nope,
right?
No.
Or any of them, really. Apart from the holdovers, we know those folks a little bit. But where is that going to come from?
And unless you came in from outside the Broncos, it's hard to start loving winning more than losing when you haven't done it that often and realize what it feels like. That's just the simple reality. The Broncos did suffer injuries, as Sandy alluded to. We have the latest on those. They had the walkthrough today at Dove Valley. We'll give you the updates on all of them as we break down the Broncos' first preseason weekend. We'll do that next on Miley Sports.